I Eat Green with Bhavani, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a beautiful afternoon, early evening on Wednesday. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And like always, this show is recorded live, so should you have any questions at any time throughout the show, feel free to give us a call at 888-874-4888. Today, I am really happy to have as a guest on my show, Amy Hamlin, and she's the executive director for the New York Coalition for Healthy School Food. And I met Amy years ago when, we first met because we both work with schools and are passionate about the food our kids are eating. And she's been the director and has been really doing some amazing things with that organization. It's a statewide nonprofit organization, and they work to improve the health and well-being of New York students. They advocate for healthy plant-based foods, including local and organic where possible, and they promote farm-to-school programs. They work hard, really hard, to eliminate unhealthy competitive foods in all areas of the school, and not just the cafeteria, so down by the gym and the vending machines everywhere. And they work towards comprehensive nutrition policies, and they work to educate our students to become food and health literate. So she'll be joining us in a little while. Before then, as always, I have a really great recipe that I want to share with you that I made the other day, and I actually changed it a bit and improved on it so that it would really fit many of my clients who are looking to eat gluten-free and dairy-free. So it's a recipe that it's a chocolate almond raspberry torte, and I've adjusted it so that it's a gluten-free and dairy-free, unbelievably delicious, beautiful, gourmet-looking dessert. So I'll share that with you. I just want to share with you also a few things that are going on in my life and around New York. As you all know, I share or co-chair a chapter of Slow Food on Long Island called Slow Food Huntington. And this past Friday night, we celebrated our trip to Terra Madre. It actually was a celebration around the globe of Terra Madre Day. So we were one of over 1,000 chapters celebrating Terra Madre Day on Friday. Although my guest last week, Jim, he was talking about, or the week before, doing it on Saturday, I think. But anyway, it was a celebration. It was a potluck. Everybody brought some really great homemade food, and we showed slides and a short video of Terra Madre, which is Mother Earth, and it's really a celebration of good, clean, fair food around the globe. And it was just a really nice, coming together of people from the community. And every time we do this, we're so thankful, one, to the Huntington Cinema Arts Center, which has become Slow Food's kind of home. They've welcomed us in, and we do most of our meetings there and our events there. And, they've really made us feel welcome, and they are just a wonderful sister nonprofit. So if any of you are from the island, you might want to think about joining the Cinema Arts Center as well, because that's a wonderful nonprofit organization bringing art films to the island. And I think it's the only theater like that out there. So it's really great. And they even serve organic popcorn, which is always wonderful. And then this coming Monday, Anne, my co-chair, and I are really proud to be honored by this other wonderful nonprofit called Sustainable Long Island. And Sustainable Long Island is a nonprofit working towards addressing food equity issues and looking at the island and where the pockets of what we call food deserts are. And food deserts are areas where there are no supermarkets. Pockets where, I guess, supermarket chains have felt like it wasn't financially viable for them to be there. They didn't do enough business or what have you, so they are not in the areas where there's lots of fast food restaurants. So people who live in these pockets have a really hard time getting fresh fruits and vegetables. Most of their food stamp dollars are spent at the convenience store at the local gas station or bodega or, 7-Eleven, that kind of thing. And they don't really have access to good fruits and vegetables. So Sustainable Long Island has worked really hard this past year and brought youth-run farmers markets to these areas. And this year was, the first year, so they only had two locations, but they're hoping to expand that this coming year to at least five locations. And the thing that's really wonderful is by working with high school students to man the booths, they not only are giving jobs to teenagers, but they are immediately getting the population of people they want there because people, friends, family, they all come down. And they also are employing, unemployed vets from the shelters to drive these students to pick up the produce. And so these youth-run farmers markets have been thriving. I think the first week they said they sold, a couple hundred dollars worth of produce, and by the end they were selling like $4,000 worth of produce in one day. And so it's really, really grew, and, it's been a really wonderful community-building spot for the neighborhood. So it's really made a difference in so many people's lives, and we're really hoping to expand that. So this coming Monday, the 20th of December, Sustainable Long Island is having a fundraiser out at Ohika Castle on Long Island. And they are hoping to raise money to support more of these youth-run farmers markets in the coming year. So if you are in the New York area, Long Island preferably, we'd love to see you there. I think you can still get tickets. Go online to sustainablelongisland.org and you can find out information about purchasing tickets for that. So let me get on with my recipe because I know Amy is already on the air or on the phone waiting to come on. So this gluten-free and dairy-free chocolate almond tort is a perfect dessert for the holiday. And by making it gluten-free and dairy-free, I did not feel like I lost any of the flavor or deliciousness or beauty that this recipe had when it was made with gluten and dairy. And so beautiful. So if you are having company and you don't know what everyone's diet is, why not make it this way and it will be safe for all? So anyway, the crust, you want to purchase gluten-free and dairy-free chocolate wafer cookies from your local health food store. And there's many different ones, and you can actually, buy a pack and taste it, and if you don't think that's the right one, you can buy a different pack. I mean, you have to really, you're looking for a wafer that is kind of like a shortbread. And if you are also trying to avoid sugar, you can find ones that are, sweetened with barley malt or something like that. And you also need coconut oil. You need almond paste. And almond paste also, you need to look to see that it's a gluten-free almond paste. I know a company called Solo makes a gluten-free almond paste, and there are others. Some almond paste is made with water, and some almond paste is made with egg whites. So if you do not eat eggs, you also need to look at the ingredients of the almond paste and find an almond paste that does not have egg whites in it. But gluten-free is easy to find. You want 8 ounces of bittersweet gluten-free and dairy-free chocolate chips or just chocolate bars that you cut up. 1/3 cup of coconut milk. If you prefer, you can also use almond milk, and that would work really fine as well. 3 half pints of organic raspberries, 2 tablespoons of organic raspberry jam, 2 teaspoons of Kirsch or some other cherry or raspberry brandy, and sliced toasted almonds for garnish. So you combine the cookie crumbs and the coconut oil in a food processor. And first you want to, you know, pulse the cookies to crumble them. Then you add the coconut oil, process a little bit more by pulsing. And then the crust or the cookies and the oil stick, you know, become like a ball and they start sticking together. Take it out at that point. You're just going to press it into a tart pan. And a tart pan, a 9 or 10 inch diameter tart pan, the sides are fluted and they're only about a half inch tall, and the bottom is removable. And that's the kind of pan you want. And you do want to spray the pan first with a little bit of, you know, safflower oil or a PAM equivalent, just to keep the crust from sticking. And then you're just going to press it into the tart pan. And to get the edges to look really nice on the edge of the tart pan, what I do is I press the crust up to the edge, and then I put another finger at the top ridge of the tart pan so that I flatten the top of the crust so that it has a really nice, clean, finished look to it. And you're going to bake that crust in a 350 oven for about 15 minutes. And sometimes what happens is the crust starts bubbling up in the center. You can put pie weights on it if you wanted to, but you can also just watch it. And if that starts happening, just press it down with a fork. You know, you can puncture a hole in it. So you're basically just letting the air out so it goes flat again. And you're going to cook it for about 15 minutes until it looks toasted, and then remove it and let it cool. Then you're going to press the almond paste into the crust, okay? And you need a 10-ounce can of almond paste, and you just sprinkle that all along the bottom and then spread it out so that you're covering the whole bottom crust with this almond paste. And then you want to have the chocolate chips or the chopped up chocolate in a bowl. And you want bittersweet, but you want it to be about 50-60%. You don't really want to go above that because you do want some sweetness in the chocolate. You want to heat up the coconut milk or the almond milk, and then you just pour it over the chocolate chips and just wait a minute. Let the heat from the milk soften the chocolate, and then you can just mix it together, and that will melt it enough. If you find that it's not melted enough, you can, you know, if you're not opposed to a microwave, you can zap it for 30 seconds, or you can put it on a double boiler. But it should, you know, that should be enough just by putting the hot liquid over the chocolate. They should melt enough so that you can stir them up and make a smooth paste with that. And then you're just going to pour that on top of the almonds or the almond paste that's all over the bottom of the crust. Then you just place that into the refrigerator so that the chocolate hardens. Okay, and that takes about, you know, at least an hour. All right, you want to cool it down for at least an hour. If you're in a rush, you can put it into the freezer and speed things up. But you can actually do this part even a day in advance if you want, and wait till the next day to garnish it, depending on what your timing is. But once it's hard, then you can easily cover it with some saran wrap and then decorate it the next day, or take it out of the refrigerator and decorate the top with the 3 half pints of raspberries. Again, raspberries, all berries, you know, those are the fruits that you really want to try to get organic, because they are heavily sprayed if they're not organic. And when you place them all on the top of the tart pan, you want to place them so that the pointy side is up and the open edge is face down. Okay, it will just look prettier that way. And then you're going to take 2 tablespoons of organic raspberry jam and 2 teaspoons of the liqueur and melt that together in a saucepan just till it you know, starts warming up and comes together. And then you brush the jam over the raspberries just as a, you know, as a shiny finish to the tort. Then you garnish the edges with the toasted almonds. And it is just so beautiful with the dark chocolate coloring, with the red raspberries, with the almonds on the side. It's just so beautiful. Nobody would believe it's a gluten-free and dairy-free dessert. And that is it. Okay, so now I'd like to invite my guests on, Amy Hamlin, who is the Executive Director for the New York Coalition of Healthy School Food. Amy, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you. That sounded so good.
It is so good. It's
not that we would want to serve them in schools.
Right. It does have sugar. But you know what? I say this all the time. If you are going to eat something sweet, let it be real. Let it be delicious. And just don't do it that often.
You know? I couldn't agree more.
You know? I mean, to have something artificial to avoid the sugar doesn't make sense. Have it. Enjoy it. Just don't have too much. And savor each bite. You know, I put your fork down and let your taste buds feel every last drop of that flavor before you take the next bite. You know, it's the zen of eating. And when you have a beautiful dessert that's so beautiful, and that's how, you know, these high-end restaurants get away with making such small portions. They decorate the plate so beautifully that you eat slower because it's a work of art. You know, you don't dive into it the way you do in like a big bowl of pasta, you know?
Right.
It's different.
Right. Well, what we say that there's nothing wrong with special treats, just not multiple times every day.
Oh, yeah.
And if you are going to eat something that's a special treat, make it a good quality.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
That's very important.
You know, because people say to me, you know, your kids never had chocolate chip cookies. And I was like, of course they had chocolate chip cookies. But they had chocolate chip cookies that I made with all organic ingredients that were delicious. And it was a special treat, and most of the time they participated in making them. And it was very different than, you know, just going to the store and buying a package. So, anyway, Amy, I want to share with people what you are doing with the New York Coalition for Healthy School Food. I told people a little bit about the organization and, you know, that you promote plant-based foods in schools and that you're just trying to educate and create food literate students. But I wanted to know what problems do you hope to address with your work, like other than the obvious, you know, trying to get kids to eat better. You know, where do you see the coalition going and what are your dreams for it?
Well, it's not just obesity because there's a poor health crisis. So even children who are not overweight or obese still often are malnourished. But 34% of children are overweight or obese, and 68% of adults are overweight or obese. So then the chronic disease statistics are just frightening. For example, 50% of children between the ages of 2 and 15 already have fatty streaks in their arteries. And this is literally the early stages of heart disease.
Mm.
And then 30-40% of all U.S. children and 40-53% of African American and Latino children will get type 2 diabetes at some point in their lives if we don't do something to change it. And, of course, with type 2 diabetes comes blindness, amputations, kidney dialysis, heart disease, all of these problems, a shorter life and a lower quality of life. And then 35% of cancer deaths are caused by diet, and that's not caused by fruits and vegetables and legumes and whole grains and nuts and seeds.
Right.
So we have a pie chart, and this pie chart shows the U.S. food consumption as a percentage of calories, and you can see this on our website, which is at healthyschoolfood.org, and it's under the Nutrition 101 tab. And this pie chart shows food divided into three categories: processed foods, which include oils, refined grains, and sugars that are added, not the naturally occurring ones, but added ones.
Uh-huh.
The animal foods, which would be the meat, the dairy, the eggs, the fish, and the seafood, and then the plant foods.
Mm-hmm.
So 63% of our calories come from processed foods. That's added oils, added sugars, and refined grains. 63%. And then 25% of our calories come from foods and beverages that come from animals. Now, cholesterol, we often hear that we should eat less cholesterol. And what a lot of people don't know, probably your listeners do, but what a lot of people don't know is that cholesterol is only found in animal products. So when we hear that we should eat less cholesterol, it really means we should eat less animal products. And we also hear that we should eat less saturated fat. And animal products are also the primary source of saturated fat in the diet. So eat less cholesterol and less saturated fat means reduce your animal products, whether it's
right.
meat, cheese, eggs, fish, seafood, reduce those. And then we hear that we should also eat more fiber. So we've got 63% of our calories from processed foods, 25% from animal foods, and then 12% from plant foods. And that's not just fruits and vegetables, but also whole grains and legumes, the beans, the lentils, the split peas, and the nuts and seeds. Now, the problem is that's only 12% of our calories, and even about half of those plant foods end up in junk food.
Mm-hmm.
Think of the almonds and Almond Joy candy bars, the apples and Mrs. Smith's apple pies or McDonald's.
Right, right.
And you think of all these things, the food, so you end up with about only 6% of calories in the diet that are the most health-supporting and the most disease-preventing. And so our mission is to teach people to just move in the right direction, because it's a free country and we can eat anything we want, but let's be educated and let's understand, and let's also understand how the food industry and food politics is influencing what we know about nutrition, what we hear about nutrition, what the food industry is about to say about their products and how they're labeled. Let's understand these things so everybody can make the best decisions. And we feel the easiest way to help people move in the right directions is to say just eat less processed foods, eat less animal foods, and eat more whole plant foods. Because
right.
really,
I'm sorry, I was going to say also environmentally, that's the way to go. I mean, the processed
right.
foods and the meat and dairy foods, those are the most pollution producing foods. I mean, people don't think that food production really adds to global warming, but it really does. I mean, there's, you know, I don't want to go off the topic here, but environmentally, and I'm sure you address that somewhat in your programs as well.
It's actually totally related, because the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization came out with this huge report back in 2006 called Livestock's Long Shadow, and livestock is defined as all animals raised for food, and they said that raising animals for food contributes more to global warming than all transportation combined.
Right.
And they said that was 18% of all global warming greenhouse gases. Now, what happened was last fall in 2009, the lead environmental scientists from the World Bank, published in World Watch Institute, said that all this research about raising animals for food has way underestimated the global warming that's happening as a result of raising all those animals. So livestock on this planet outnumber humans 5-1. They're very resource intensive. They cause a lot of pollution. And the World Bank lead environmental researchers say that raising animals for food and beverages contributes to 51% of all global warming. So whether it's 18% or 51% or somewhere in between, the message has become very clear. And if people are listening or if they know where to look, people really now know that we need to, for our health and for the environment and because of what they do to the animals, which is really horrendous, that we have got to cut back on our animal products.
Right. And so, if you are going to eat animal products, they need to be raised in a sustainable way, which means local, close to home, without the high processing, so that the animal at least has a life worth living, you know?
Well, I would say that, you know, it's a whole other discussion, but the one quick thing I'll add about that is that, you know, if you're going to eat animal products, then that would be the type, except that it's not really sustainable because we don't really have enough land to raise all the animals that way. And it's also something that most people can't afford to do, so it's not sustainable because most people can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just not the land. So to me, the the more important message is to reduce what you're eating. And I think that's even for the people who are eating those locally raised animals, you still want to reduce.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So, and I know you agree with that. So there's all these issues. And so what we do in schools is we promote the plant foods, the foods that children are not getting enough of. And all schools know that we need more fruits and vegetables and that we need whole grains. And I would say most schools around the country know that and are working on that. But what really gets left out oftentimes is the main dish. So our big project in New York City, but we're also doing it in Ithaca and some other places too, is called Project Cool School Food.
Mm-hmm.
And that cool in there means that the food is not only really cool, like how we think of cool, but it's cool, not warm. In other words, it doesn't contribute to global warming as much as the main dishes that are focused on meat and cheese. So what we're doing is plant-based, international bean-based recipes, which is really exciting because it celebrates the diversity of the students in the New York City school system.
Right.
We're statewide, but this project started out in New York City. So we've had people develop recipes, and we're still asking for recipe submissions because we're going to be doing the contest again. And there's a lot of details, but people can find those at our website if they go on our homepage at healthyschoolfood.org. There's the What's Happening box, and they can wait until they see the recipe contest for Project Cool School Food and get those details. But we take those recipes then, we turn them over to the New York City Office of School Food, who's been absolutely wonderful to work with. They're very, very open to partnerships. They really want to do what we're doing. In fact, their wellness policy, which was federally mandated that every school district have a wellness policy, states that they'll offer and promote the inclusion of plant-based entrees. So we're just helping them reach goals that they want to reach.
How do you deal with the archaic nutritional guidelines that were set up at the U.S. Department of Agriculture that says you need to have a certain amount of protein or a certain amount of calories in your meal? Because I remember, you know, hearing, you know, Ann Cooper when she was talking about, Ann Cooper is, as you know, is you know, the renegade late lunch lady, but
and
she
on
worked
our
out
advisory board too,
right? And worked out at the Ross School, and you know, helped set up, you know, healthy school food in Berkeley. But you know, they set a calorie amount that's each lunch is supposed to meet, and that is partly why when they started to cut down on fats and saying we need to provide more low-fat meals, they up the sugar because they otherwise couldn't meet their calories. And that's partly why so many sugary foods came into the school lunch program. So it's, you know, how do you deal with that?
Well, so the rules are that there has to be there's different menu planning systems. Most schools use food-based menu planning, which means there's five components of food. There's milk, there's a main dish, there's a grain, and then there's two from the fruit and vegetable category. And for most schools, they have something called offer versus serve, which means that they have to offer the five components, but students only have to take three components for the school to have a meal that they can be reimbursed for.
Right.
So in the protein category, which is, you know, of course, we think fresh fruits and vegetables and whole grains are very, very important. And most schools, as I said, are already working on that. We're trying to work on the main dish because that's often ignored. The standard main dish in schools across the country is chicken nuggets, mozzarella sticks, cheeseburgers, and pizza. Those are the ones that are on menus all across the country. And so we're working on these main dishes. And for protein, a half a cup of beans counts as a protein.
Okay.
What doesn't count are other plant-based proteins unless they're a sort of a processed food that's already gone through some approval, so that there's some, for example, some veggie burgers that have gone through an approval. They're not meat and they're not beans either. You know, they're made out of soy. And I certainly think a veggie burger is better than a beef hamburger in terms of health, but we don't really promote them because they're processed too. Mm-hmm. So if I had a choice, I'd rather see the veggie burger offered, but I'd also rather have a veggie burger that's based on beans or lentils and vegetables and whole grains. That's what I'd most rather have. So a half a cup of legumes works for a protein.
Mm-hmm. So have they approved tofu as one of these proteins?
No, they have not. The schools that use the other kind of menu planning system, which is called nutrient-based menu planning system, which involves using an approved database approved by the USDA, where they put in all the ingredients, and basically they just have to meet certain requirements, they can use tofu.
Mm-hmm.
And tofu can be used in a school meal. It just doesn't count as the protein.
Right.
And, I need to do a little more research, but my understanding is that the reason that tofu doesn't count in the food-based menu planning system is because it soaks in water and it's hard to measure the exact protein content.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a problem with that if that's actually true because first of all, they soak chicken in water too,
mm-hmm.
to plump it up to make it weigh more for more profit. And the other thing is most Americans get 2 to 3 times more protein than they need. So protein is not actually considered a nutrient of concern. That's like a term that's used, a nutrient of concern.
Mm-hmm.
Protein's not a nutrient of concern in this country.
Right.
So everybody gets too much. And so
right.
Tofu is a concentrated protein. It's, only very lightly processed. And there are benefits to unprocessed or only lightly processed soy foods.
And I've said this before on the air, you need to get organic. And that's
absolutely.
And they're not gonna, the schools probably aren't going to want to go for the organic. But if you're not eating organic soy is is all genetically modified. So
absolutely.
Unless it's organic, don't bother.
Soy and canola and corn, right? Most
right.
soy, canola, and corn's genetically modified. So yes, that even goes without saying, but thank you for bringing it up.
Yeah.
And so I would love to see a tofu vegetable stir fry on brown rice. That could be a very nice lunch. And unless they have the nutrient-based menu planning system, they couldn't do that. Or they could do it. It's just that the tofu would count as a vegetable, not as a protein.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have to have some other kind of protein on the menu that day, and then the students could still get a vegetable tofu stir fry. But given the size portions, it really wouldn't be a full main dish because
mm-hmm.
it would be the size portion for vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, we can work around it. The other types of plant-based proteins probably would cost too much for schools to afford anyway. So one of the things I want to talk about is that schools have only about 90 cents, or in New York City, maybe about a dollar, for the food itself. I'm not talking about how much a student pays for the lunch or how much the school is reimbursed, because there's the staff who needs to be paid and there's the overhead costs. But I'm talking about the food cost itself per lunch nationwide is about 90 cents
mm-hmm.
for the five components. And we just passed a new federal law. President Obama just signed it on Monday. It's called the Child Nutrition Reauthorization Act. This happens every 5 years, and it's the regulations for the school meal programs, the Women, Infants, Children program, and some other food programs. And basically, it was the first increase in funding above the cost of living increase the inflation increase that happens each year. But other than the inflation increases, it's the first increase in over 30 years. But Senator Gillibrand said she wanted 70 cents more. The White House, Michelle Obama, said they wanted 18.5 cents more, and we ended up with 6 cents more food reimbursement. And the problem is that 6 cents will be tied to schools making improvements, and you can't make a whole lot of improvements with 6 cents, so it's kind of a catch-22 that it's going to be hard to make improvements. But I do have to say that the law has a lot of good things in it that weren't there. For example, now vending machine foods and other foods available and for sale in schools will all have to meet the same guidelines. mm-hmm. so that there's not this issue of what's called competitive foods. Any foods that are for sale or available in school outside of the meal program
mm-hmm.
competes with the meal program. And so when you could buy potato chips and soda in the vending machine, that's what some kids would have for lunch instead of a lunch. And so now all of the other foods will be regulated as well to make an even playing field. So that's a positive development. And there's many other aspects to the new law that'll make it better. So really, to me, the big failure is not funding it fully. You know,
right.
we say our children are our future, and we have all this money to bail out the banks, all this money for wars, and yet we don't have enough money to feed our kids decently, and we're going to pay for it anyway in health care costs.
Oh, absolutely.
So we would save so much in the long run if we would make a real investment, you know, but, of course, the whole financial situation, everybody says it's hard. It's just that, well, you have to, there has to be a political will, because there was to bail out the banks. So how about we bail out the kids and their health?
Right, right. You know, and I'd like to talk a little bit more about the competitive foods, because they still can have the vending machines down by the gym and some other places, not in the cafeteria, can't they?
Oh, yeah, but those will be regulated. All food for sale in schools will be regulated.
Meaning,
it won't
what,
happen
what does
immediately.
That mean? What does that mean?
It means there will be nutrition guidelines so that, it'll have not more than a certain amount of fat or a certain amount of sugar, that sort of thing, not more than a certain amount of sodium. Now, of course, those things alone do not make something healthy. You could have a low-fat, low-sugar, low-sodium item that's animal crackers made out of white flour and oil, which could still be low-fat.
I'd much rather see someone eat a lesser-fat potato chip, like a Cape Cod potato chip that has oil, salt, and potatoes, than one of these baked Lay's that has an ingredient list that's so long, that's filled with so many chemicals. You know, they've cut out, to take out regular potato chips and put something like that in is stupid.
I think those are the flavored ones that have the long list, because the plain baked ones don't really have too many ingredients. But, the bottom line is they're calling potato chips healthy because they're baked instead of fried. And baking potato chips does not make them healthy.
Right.
So that's just a general problem in what the food industry, in response to the whole obesity and health crisis, what they call healthy usually isn't.
Like Smartwells.
Or 100-calorie packages of certain kinds of foods. Well, okay, maybe there's less calories, but that doesn't mean it's healthy.
Right. Anyway, let's hold right there for a minute. We're going to take a 2-minute break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about some of the obstacles that you've been having and where you see your program going, okay?
Okay.
Thanks.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Hey, did you miss your favorite show? Don't worry, PRN has you covered. Just log on to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and go to the archive page, where you can choose from any of our great programs. Listen or download shows from yesterday, or even ones dating months back. The Progressive Radio Network, striving to make your lives easier.
Hi, this is Dr. Meir Eisenstein. Every Thursday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, I will be coming to you live on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I will bring my background as a physician and as an attorney to help you with a minimal pharmaceutical and a minimal surgical approach to your medical issues. Please come join me.
So to join in on the conversation, call 888-874-4888. Ask Dr. Eisenstein, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on Progressive Radio Network.
This is Glenn Ford. Join me and co-host Nellie Bailey every Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for Black Agenda Radio, an hour of news, analysis, and commentary from a black left perspective. That's Black Agenda Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Amy Hamlin. We're talking about healthy school food, and she is the executive director of the Coalition for the New York Coalition for Healthy School Food. Hi, Amy.
Hi. I wondered if we could just go back to a couple more of our projects.
I was going to do that, too. Yep.
Oh, good.
Good.
So, Project Cool School Food, we're introducing the plant-based recipes that are international bean-based recipes into New York City schools. And they're made from scratch. They're really delicious. The kids are loving them. But, of course, you know, it takes more effort than just introducing food. You have to do a lot of education around it. So that's our big project. And actually, if you're in New York City, we're looking for volunteers to help with that program, volunteers who can go in the daytime at lunchtime. So another project that we have is called Wellness Wake Up Call. This is nutrition education in the form of easy-to-digest sound bites. It's written by registered dietitians, and it comes in K through 5 and 6 through 12 versions. And these are just little sound bites, messages, so that children get a little nutrition education every day. They're read over the loudspeaker in school, and if the school doesn't have a public address system, then the teacher reads them in the classroom. And then once a month, at the end of the month, the children in elementary school take home a copy. We have a healthy recipe on the back, and we encourage the parents to review the messages with their children and try making the healthy, easy, healthy recipe together. And we also encourage the districts to post them on their websites or put them in their newsletters so that the parents of the 6th through 12th students can also see them. So that program is actually heard by more than 100,000 students every day, not just all over New York City and New York State, but other states and even a couple of other countries.
Really? Now, now is that pre-recorded, or you just tell people what to say and then the kids say it over the loudspeaker?
Well, you print it out and somebody reads it over the loudspeaker.
Uh-huh.
And then it's free for schools in New York State. And then for schools outside of New York State, it's just $50 a year per school district. So it's very, very affordable. But for New York State schools, it's free. Then we also are about to start a family and consumer sciences pilot program where we work with a family and consumer sciences teacher developing recipes that can be that are super healthy and easy and low cost that can be taught in the family and consumer sciences cooking section. And then finally, we ran a program for 2 years in Ithaca, New York, the Fresh Fruit and Vegetable Snack Program. There's actually a federal version, but we did a private version of the program with as much local and organic as we possibly could, and it was amazing. On our website, there's a 15-minute video that people can watch to see what happened. But basically, children were eating beets and turnips and kale and bok choy, and many other fruits and vegetables, but those are some of the ones that people might find more surprising, raw and with no dips.
Mm.
And a lot of adults said, kids will not eat vegetables without dip. And we said, you know, we don't want to ruin 40 calories of vegetables with 400 calories of dip. And, you know, it is true, it's possible to have a healthy dip, but most dips are not healthy.
Right.
And so we just really want kids to develop the taste for the vegetables. And so what happened was, we heard from several teachers that students were coming back after weekends and vacation, saying they really missed their fruits and vegetables and just didn't feel the same without them.
Mm, nice.
So we have also had our staff in local grocery stores overhearing children from the school asking their parents for beets and other vegetables. That's just not something you would normally overhear. But, you know, one of the points I want to make is that we're the adults. We choose what our children eat at home. And if we don't feed them unhealthy food, if we raise them unhealthy food, that's what they're used to and that's what they like. So a lot of people say, oh, kids will never do that. But even kids who weren't necessarily raised that way, certainly some kids in the school were, but even for the kids who weren't raised that way, they have really come to enjoy the fruits and vegetables and really like eating them. And most importantly, they've come to understand how it actually makes them feel,
mm-hmm.
that they feel better when they eat them.
Right.
So that's the Fruit and Vegetable Snack Program, a huge success. You can watch a 15-minute video all about it that's really great to watch. And also, while you're there, there's a 10-minute video about our organization in general.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Okay. And the Wellness Wake-Up Call is downloadable from our website, like I said, for free for people who are in New York State, for New York State schools.
Mm-hmm. And with the fruit and vegetable boom, do you ever ever cook any of the vegetables or roast them or anything like that?
No, it's all raw.
All raw.
Yep.
Good.
So we only do certain, you know, we don't do vegetables that would have to be cooked.
Mm-hmm. Right. Although, you know, for many kids, beets, cauliflower, parsnips, those, I know because I've gone into, you know, school sometimes with these vegetables, but I do roast them first and I bring them in and it's just, they just snack away, you know.
Oh, sure. They're so great.
They're just a great snack, you know, so if any parents are listening, you know, raw is great, but also just roasting the vegetables just with, you know, a little bit of olive oil, and then you keep them cold in the refrigerator, and the kids just pop them in their mouth.
That's right.
And you take a plastic bag out for a snack, and it's just really great.
And I also don't know how you do this, but I've heard about roasting chickpeas.
Uh-huh.
As a great snack.
Yeah.
But I don't know how you do it, so I'll have to try it sometime.
Well, I know that if you soak them overnight first, soak them overnight so that they, you know, when, as you know, they plump up, you know, they mm-hmm. more than double in their size. And then just put a little olive oil in them. You can sprinkle them with some herbs and put them in the oven, slow roasting for a couple hours, and they'll come
out
delicious.
And you can also do it with chickpeas that are already cooked, too. You can just put them in and roast them.
Sure.
Apparently. So a great snack idea.
Mm-hmm. Great. So also, I know on your website, I saw something about an in-service teacher training program. So do you have much opportunity to teach teachers how to bring food literacy into their classroom?
Well, we're available to do in-service teacher trainings, and we have done them. And we also have a presentation for all of the teachers for Project Cool School Food. So in the schools where we pilot our program,
mm-hmm.
we give presentations to teachers. So we're available for that. And it's definitely good because the more staff in the school that understand some basic nutrition concepts, as I said, so many people feel like they know about healthy nutrition, but what they're really getting is the healthy nutrition version that the food industry puts out there because it's so prevalent and they're so out there and they have so much money. So we do some education about healthy nutrition and the effects that it has on kids and that really, I think it does make a difference. It helps the teachers a lot. So we are very interested in doing that.
And I would think also with the parents, correct?
Oh, you know, yes, absolutely. We give talks at PTA meetings and things like that, yeah.
Yeah, I found that too. I mean, parents, you know, and I've said this on the air before as well, I found in my work, parents sometimes are the biggest obstacle because we're such, not that we're any different than anyone else, but food is such a personal thing, and so many family activities and people come together around food. And if the food they're coming together around is the food that we have agreed is unhealthy, and yet that's what they're the parents are giving their children, then when you start teaching these kids that these are unhealthy foods, parents feel really threatened that you're teaching their children that the parents are giving their children unhealthy food. And parents don't want their kids to think they're giving them unhealthy food. And so I've really found that to be one of my biggest challenges is to, you know, how to tread really lightly so that you're not threatening anyone or no one's feeling judged about the foods that they're choosing. However, at the same time, trying to educate them that a hot dog is not healthy. You know, yes, it might have protein in it, but everything else it has, and it's not healthy, you know, any way you look at it. And, you know, and that's a really tough thing. That's like all American hot dogs, you know.
Hot dogs are convincing carcinogens, as like I said before, the processed meats, less than one serving a week, just 2 ounces a week, increases colorectal cancer risk in women 30 to 50%, anything that has nitrates in it, any processed meats, hot dogs, sausage, pepperoni, bacon, any of the lunch meats.
All those cold cuts.
So people don't know that, but they're all now considered convincing carcinogens. And this isn't just a few studies. It's not just a few hundred studies. It's thousands of studies have shown this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's now called convincing carcinogens. And we know less than one serving a week for adult women, and children are more susceptible to carcinogens. So we really have to look at what we're doing. And so I know you wanted to know about the obstacles, and this directly ties in. Those kinds of things are cheap. And our biggest obstacles are there's a lack of funding for school meals.
Mm-hmm.
So we already talked about that. And the laws that allowed the unhealthy competitive foods, but that's hopefully going to be addressed. The question is, how will they make those guidelines? Because as I was saying, you can have low fat, low sugar, low sodium. It doesn't make it healthy. It has to also focus on fresh and unprocessed as part of what they require to make it truly healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think a lot of schools, they're so busy. There's so many problems in any school that sometimes this nutrition issue just falls by the wayside, and sometimes schools don't comprehend just how bad the problem is and how many problems are caused by the fact that the children are malnourished. Because if you eat the standard American diet, you're malnourished. And so a lot of schools feel like, you know, the baked potato chips in the vending machine or the fresh carrots are the answer. Well, of course, fresh carrots are great, but my point is that it has to go far beyond just adding one or two kinds of vegetables or having lower fat or no fat items. There's just so much more to it. And so schools, they all pretty much understand that kids need to have breakfast to function, and they know that. And but it is amazing, this program that they did in Appleton, Wisconsin, where they basically did the Feingold diet, you know, nothing artificial. They had a vegetarian entree as an option. Everything was whole foods, and it was in an alternative public high school. And the number of disciplinary problems went down dramatically. I mean, they couldn't believe it.
Right.
Just by giving kids the right fuel for their bodies.
Right, because, I mean, they start with the breakfast plan, and they give kids a bagel with butter on it or a bagel and cream cheese. What does that
right.
do? What does
or
that,
an
that
omelet
does not...
with sausage or, you
yeah.
know, eggs and sausage. It's just so high fat. Their blood is slushing around, going really slowly through their blood vessels, and it really, that's what makes people so tired after a heavy meal is all this oil in their blood slowing things down. So, yeah, it's really hard. I mean, so we're really working on this from many different angles, and we have a waiting list of schools just waiting to come on board. And unfortunately, we have not been able to get to all the schools who are asking for help, because just like all nonprofits are experiencing difficulties raising money, so are we. It's not as easy as it used to be, but in our situation, this topic is very hot right now,
mm-hmm.
and I think it will continue to be until it's addressed in a major, major way. It's a very hot topic, and all the pieces are in place. You know, we have the partnerships. We have a partnership with the New York City Office of School Food, but also with Candle Cafe and Candle 79 restaurants,
mm-hmm.
Henry's restaurants, the Jane Beard Foundation, and the Food and Finance High School. So these are all partners with us for Project Cool School Food, and we have a waiting list of schools with everything in place except the funding to be able to have the resources to actually make it happen. So I would love to encourage your listeners to go to our website, healthyschoolfood.org, and there's a donate button.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to especially encourage people, because this is a very painless way to donate, I want to make a suggestion that people could donate a minimum of $10 a month. There's a recurring donation function.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, we're talking maybe 2 lattes a month that you give up to really help make a big difference,
right,
for many, many children. So,
well, that's wonderful.
Course,
say the address of your website again for everybody.
It's healthyschoolfood.org.
Okay.
Healthyschoolfood.org. And so this recurring donation with a minimum donation of $10 a month, that can really make a big difference. And it's, you know, more painless because it's not a whole lot at once.
Right.
But one-time donations of any amount are welcome. And we hope that if you're interested in volunteering, we would welcome that as well.
Well, great. Is your organization also working on getting out into the garden, trying to build some farm-to-cafeteria programs?
Well, we encourage it and we advocate for it. We're not actually right now doing that, just because we're very focused on this idea of getting the plant-based entrees.
Mm-hmm.
That's really our focus, but we have been involved. We supported a program in Ithaca that was a gardening program with middle school students.
Mm-hmm.
So we love the idea, because we know the biggest two things to get kids to eat healthier is to have them grow the food,
mm-hmm.
and have them help make the food.
Right.
Those two things will get children interested in eating better food.
Right.
And here's another thing. When we're talking about, you know, we're the adults, as parents, we decide what our children eat. Some parents say, well, my kids won't eat it. They just won't eat it. The thing is that if you buy the food and you don't have unhealthy food, the kids won't starve. They will not starve themselves.
They will eat it, right.
They could be stubborn for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
But they will not starve themselves.
Right.
So I also really encourage the parents to think about that, because, and I know it's hard. I have a daughter who's 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I know how hard it is, but
right.
I also know that she likes healthy food just because I've made a priority to make sure that's what she gets.
And we all have to role model. You know, it's like when you addressed just really lightly that the teachers, they're all so overburdened with teaching towards these tests and all these mandates, and their jobs are on the line. And, you know, so they don't really have the desire to take on more. To have a nutrition curriculum is just like not a part of what they want to do, unless it's part of the curriculum that the kids are getting tested on. So they're really, you know, they're at a loss. So that's why I was asking if you help teach teachers how to bring this into the classroom, because they need to work on incorporating these healthy food ideas into the already existing curriculum.
That's right. But that's also why Wellness Wake Up is a great program,
right,
because it's really no extra burden on the teachers.
Right.
But yes,
and that's why the cafeteria, the healthy plant-based meal in the cafeteria, is great, because it's role modeling. It's just, it's eating it. It's not anything that they have to do. It's just eating it, but you have to make it delicious. It has to be.
And let me just say that in New York City, even if a school is not part of our pilot program, as long as they have a cooking kitchen, they can make these recipes. These recipes are sent out to all of the schools. So any school that wants to make them can make them.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they have a cooking kitchen.
Right. Well, that's great. Well, I will definitely spread the word, Amy. I think you and your organization are doing unbelievably remarkable work, and I applaud you for it, and I encourage you to keep going on. And for any listeners, you know, please, you know, at this holiday time, if you are making donations to worthwhile organizations, please keep the Coalition for Healthy School Food in your mind.
And we welcome volunteers.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for joining us. And everybody, I wish you all a wonderful, wonderful rest of your Wednesday and have a great holiday. I'll be here, though, next week. So I'll see you then. Have a good day.